Imagine for a second that you are a master carpenter.
Okay.
You've spent years learning how to frame a wall, how to carve intricate designs. You know how to build a roof that absolutely won't leak.
Right. You're a total pro.
Exactly. And you show up to the job site, you're ready to build a literal mansion. You open your toolbox, and all you have is a single rusty screwdriver.
Yeah, you're not going to get very far with that. You'd be lucky to build a, I don't know, a decent birdhouse.
Exactly. And yet, when we talk about the digital world, like the apps we use, the websites we scroll, or, the banking systems that hold our actual money,
Right.
we always talk about the code itself. We very rarely talk about the actual workshop where that code is
Like, it's
built.
a huge oversight, honestly, because that workshop, the environment you're working in, it entirely determines how fast you build, how many mistakes you make, and ultimately whether the thing you're building actually works.
Right. And in the programming world, that workshop has a name.
It does.
It's the IDE, the Integrated Development Environment, which I know sounds a bit dry.
A bit technical, yeah.
Yeah, a bit technical. But as we found in the research for today's deep dive, this is literally the cockpit for the modern world.
It really is. And, to understand the architect's toolkit, which is what we are deep diving into today, you really have to understand that an IDE isn't just a text editor.
Right.
It's not just, Microsoft Word for code.
So let's actually unpack that first, because I think a lot of people just picture the Hollywood version of coding, right?
Oh, totally. The hacker typing green text on a black screen really fast. Yeah.
Exactly. I'm in. But what is actually happening inside a modern IDE?
So think of it as a factory floor.
Okay.
Yes, you have the station where you actually write the code, and that is the text editor part. But an IDE wraps that in layers of heavy machinery.
Like what kind of machinery?
Well, it has a compiler, for one, which basically translates your human-readable text into the raw ones and zeros that the computer actually understands.
Right, the actual machine language.
Exactly. And it has a debugger, which is like a real-time diagnostic tool. It scans for errors while the machine is running to tell you exactly where things are breaking.
So it's the writing, the translating, and the fixing, all under one single roof.
Precisely. And if we look at the history, it used to be just that green screen, early terminals and consoles, very stripped back.
Just a digital piece of paper, basically.
Yeah. But the landscape for 2025, which is really the focus of our sources today, is completely different. The tools have evolved from passive typewriters into, active collaborators.
And that was the detail that really blew my mind in the reading. We aren't just talking about a fancy spell check anymore.
No, not at all.
The sources highlight that the top tools right now are heavily integrating machine learning.
It is the single biggest shift in the landscape. The IDE isn't just sitting there waiting for you to type, it's actively analyzing your intent. It uses machine learning to autocomplete entire blocks of code. And not just because it memorized a dictionary, but because it actually understands the context of what you are trying to build.
So it's basically like having a senior architect standing right over your shoulder whispering, "Hey, don't use that beam, use this one instead because it can hold more weight."
That is exactly what it is. And that leads us perfectly into our mission for today.
Right, the top 10.
Yeah, we have a list of the top 10 tools from our research, but we aren't just going to read them off like a grocery list. We're going to categorize them, break down the actual trade-offs, and help you, the listener, figure out which workshop fits your specific project.
Because, as we're going to see, you wouldn't use a massive factory just to hang a picture frame.
And you wouldn't use a hammer to build a skyscraper.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So let's start right at the top of the food chain. I call these the heavyweights.
Heavyweights, I like that.
These are the tools that seem to absolutely dominate the professional enterprise-level conversation. The first one on the list is IntelliJ IDEA.
Oh yeah, this is a titan. Specifically in the Java world, if you are building massive enterprise applications in Java, IntelliJ is widely considered the absolute gold standard.
The sources describe it as having a really heavy focus on productivity and user experience.
Right.
But specifically, they talk about this feature called smart code completion. How is that different from just the regular autocomplete I have on my phone when I'm texting?
It's all about context. So your phone suggests tomorrow after you type see you.
Right.
But that's just basic probability. IntelliJ actually indexes your entire project.
Like it reads everything.
Everything. It knows every class you've created, every method you've written, every single connection in the whole architecture. So when it suggests a completion, it's suggesting something that actually fits the specific logic of your unique application.
So it's actually reading your mind a little bit, or at least reading your blueprint.
It really is.
Yeah.
And it even integrates version control right into the main interface, so you don't even have to leave the window to save your progress or manage different versions of your code. It's totally designed to keep you in the flow state.
But there has to be a physics problem here, right?
Yeah.
Like energy in, energy out. To be that smart, to index millions of lines of code in real time, it has to cost something.
It costs a lot of resources. Mm-hmm. The source is very explicit about this, actually. Performance is, quote, not up to the mark on low-end devices.
Ouch.
Yeah. IntelliJ is a luxury sedan, but it's a very heavy one. If you try to run it on an old laptop with limited RAM, it's going to crawl. It demands serious horsepower.
So it's productivity for the human, but pure punishment for the computer if you aren't careful.
Exactly.
Now, speaking of heavy machinery, we have the other heavyweight on our list, Visual Studio. And to be totally clear, this is the massive Microsoft version, not the lightweight code editor they also make.
Right. We're talking about the aircraft carrier of IDEs here. Visual Studio is designed to do literally anything. Pretty much. You want to build a website? Fine. A mobile app? Sure. A Windows desktop application? Absolutely.
It's the Swiss Army knife approach, except the knife is the size of a broadsword.
That's a great way to put it.
One feature that really stood out in the notes here was the Team Foundation server.
Yes.
That sounds incredibly corporate. Why does a solo developer or even a small team care about that?
It matters because of insurance. Imagine you have a team of 50 developers working on a banking app. One person changes a single line of code that accidentally breaks the entire login screen.
That sounds like a total nightmare.
In a simple editor, it might be an unmitigated disaster. But with Team Foundation Server, you have built-in checkpoints. You can just roll back the entire project to the version from 5 minutes ago or 5 days ago.
It's a literal time machine for your project.
Ideally, yes.
Gotcha.
And just like IntelliJ, Visual Studio has its own smart assistant. It's called IntelliSense, which the sources point out is particularly strong if you are coding in C++.
It even has its own internal search engine just to find features within the software itself. That really tells you how dense this thing is.
And that is the catch, isn't it? The source describes it very simply as heavy software.
Takes a very long time to load. I think that's the direct quote.
It is. You click the icon, and you might as well go make a cup of coffee. It creates a lot of files. It uses a massive amount of memory. It is incredibly comprehensive, but it is undeniably bloated.
Okay, so we have our heavyweights. They are smart, they're powerful, but they are very demanding. What if I want something that feels a bit more flexible, a bit more like a build-your-own-adventure kind of toolkit?
Then you are moving away from the proprietary giants, and you're looking at what I call the modular classics. And the absolute biggest name in this space is Eclipse.
Eclipse fascinated me in the reading because the underlying philosophy is just totally different. The source material talks about this concept of a base workspace.
Right. So think of IntelliJ or Visual Studio as a fully furnished house. You move in, the furniture is really nice, but you can't really move the walls.
You're stuck with the floor plan.
Exactly. Eclipse is entirely different. It gives you a foundation that's the base workspace. And then it relies almost entirely on plugins.
It's a Lego set.
It's exactly a Lego set. It's operated by the Eclipse Foundation, totally open source. If you want to write in Python, you just snap on the Python plugin. If you need C++, oh, you snap that one on. You literally build the environment you need.
Now, the notes also mention static analysis as a key feature for Eclipse. I want to pause on that term because it sounds like pure engineering jargon. What does that actually mean for the person sitting at the keyboard?
That's a great question. So dynamic analysis is testing your code by actually running it, turning on the engine and seeing if it explodes.
Trial by fire.
Right. Static analysis is checking the blueprint before you even build the part. It looks at your code while it's just sitting there as text and it says, hey, structurally, this logic doesn't make sense or this variable is going nowhere. Eclipse is historically very good at that deep structural analysis.
That sounds like a massive time saver. Instead of waiting for the crash, you catch the flaw in the design phase.
Precisely. And because it also supports drag and drop functionality, it can be surprisingly user-friendly once you actually have it all set up.
Now, in that same vein of modular but classic, we have NetBeans.
NetBeans is a really interesting one because of its lineage. It's open source, developed by Apache, but it has extremely deep roots with Oracle.
And Oracle owns Java.
Correct. So while Eclipse is generally seen as the community choice, NetBeans is often viewed as the official choice for Java developers. In fact, it was the official IDE for Java 8.
So if you're a diehard Java developer, using NetBeans is like playing on the home court.
Exactly. It uses these things called modules, which are functionally very similar to plugins. And for web developers specifically, the source notes that running server applications within NetBeans is exceptionally simple.
But I'm seeing a distinct pattern here with these Java-based tools.
Are you looking at the speed again?
The startup time, yeah. Just like Visual Studio, NetBeans gets severely dinged in the reviews for being slow to get out of bed in the morning.
It's the trade-off of that base workspace concept. Even if it's modular, it still has to load all those core libraries before you can do a single thing. If you are the type of person who wants to click an app and be typing in 2 seconds, these modular classics might really frustrate you.
Okay, so let's pivot then. We've looked at the generalists and we've looked at the modular classics. Now I really want to look at the specialists.
But once I've picked a lane.
Exactly. These are tools that picked a specific lane and just decided to own it completely. And the first one up is for the Python lovers, PyCharm.
PyCharm is great. It's actually developed by JetBrains, which is the exact same company behind IntelliJ. So you're going to see that same DNA of smart assistants. But this time, it is hyper-focused purely on Python.
The phrase that jumped out at me in the notes was on-the-fly error highlighting, which sounds a bit like a strict grammar teacher standing over your desk.
It is, but a very helpful one. It doesn't just put a red line under your code and say wrong. It actively offers quick fixes. It's essentially grading your paper and correcting it while you were still writing it.
That's incredible.
But what really makes it a specialist is its framework support.
Right, the notes specifically mention Django and Flask.
Yeah, so if you are building a website using Python, you are almost certainly using Django or Flask. PyCharm knows those specific frameworks inside and out. It's not guessing. It knows the exact file structure and logic you are supposed to be using.
And the research mentions a heavy science aspect too.
Yes, and this is huge right now. Python is undeniably the language of data science. PyCharm integrates seamlessly with scientific packages like NumPy and Matplotlib.
So if you're crunching massive numbers or plotting complex graphs, the IDE is natively built to handle that specific syntax.
Exactly.
So PyCharm is the modern smart specialist. But what if we swing the pendulum all the way to the complete opposite side? Let's talk about code.blocks.
Ah, the old reliable.
I really had to laugh at the description in the source material for this one. It explicitly notes that the design is, quote, a bit dull. That's not exactly glowing marketing copy for a 2025 software landscape.
No, it's not. But it's not trying to be pretty. CodeBlocks is for the C and C++ purists. These are high-performance languages used for things like heavy game engines or literal operating systems. And CodeBlocks respects that fundamental need for speed.
So it's fast.
It is incredibly fast. It uses the GNU GCC compiler, which the source describes as highly scalable. It opens basically instantly. It completely bypasses that massive indexing process that eats up all your RAM and the heavyweights.
So if PyCharm is a high-tech lab with AI assistants walking around, CodeBlocks is just a bare concrete workshop with a really fast table saw.
That's a brilliant comparison. It's highly configurable, but it absolutely will not hold your hand. If you are a beginner learning C++ CA, this is often where universities start you because it forces you to actually understand the code, not just rely on the suggestions.
And I imagine it's a total lifesaver if you have a slow computer.
Absolutely. If you are coding on a budget laptop, CodeBlocks is your best friend.
All right, let's move to a sector that is just exploding right now. We're leaving the desktop behind, or at least we're changing the definition of what a desktop is. Let's talk web, cloud, and hardware. First up in this group, Atom.
Atom is affectionately called the web designer in our notes. It was originally developed by GitHub, so it has that very modern, community-driven, open-source vibe to it.
And unlike CodeBlocks, looks actually matter here.
Big time. If you are a web developer, you are staring at HTML tags and CSS rules all day long. Atom makes that visually palatable. The syntax highlighting is color-coded beautifully. The interface is sleek and attractive. It is specifically designed to be pleasant to look at.
But I feel like I know what's coming next.
Hi, startup time.
There it is. Even though it's primarily for web design, the source notes, it can be really sluggish to get going initially. But apparently once it's running, people just love it for the endless customization.
They do. It's a favorite for tweaking your workspace exactly how you want it.
Now, speaking of the web, what if the IDE literally is the web? This brings us to AWS Cloud 9. And honestly, this broke my brain a little bit.
It's a total paradigm shift. With AWS Cloud 9, you aren't installing any software on your hard drive at all. It is a fully online IDE.
So where does the actual code live?
In the cloud. Specifically, it runs on an Amazon EC2 instance.
Okay, let's translate that for everyone. What is an EC2 instance?
Think of it as a virtual computer that you rent from Amazon. It lives in a massive server farm somewhere in the world. Cloud9 is just the window inside your web browser that lets you control that powerful remote computer.
That sounds absolutely incredible for collaboration.
It's the killer feature, without a doubt. It enables true parallel development. You and I could be sitting on entirely different continents looking at the exact same file and typing code at the exact same time. It's basically Google Docs, but for programming.
So no more emailing zip files back and forth saying final version V2 real.
Exactly. Plus, it has a built-in terminal that perfectly simulates Linux commands. So you are working on a real server environment from day one.
But there has to be a downside to being fully cloud native, right?
There is, and it's complexity. The source notes that it can be very difficult to choose the right instance to begin with. You have to know exactly what kind of server you need. Do you need more memory? Do you need more CPU cores? You aren't just a programmer anymore. You're forced to be a bit of a system administrator, too.
So you basically trade the installation wait time for configuration complexity.
Got it.
Now, let's get physical. What if I want to code something that actually moves in the real world?
Then you are grabbing the Arduino IDE. This is the definitive tool for the hardware tinkerer.
This is specifically for those little circuit boards, right?
Yes, for Arduino boards and various other microcontrollers. You use this software to write code that tells a physical object what to do. Blink an LED light, spin a tiny motor, read a temperature sensor.
And what language are we speaking when we do that?
Mostly C and C++. The source notes that most of these device libraries are written in C++ because it's so efficient. You desperately need that code to run fast on a tiny, low-power chip.
I love that the notes mention a cloud aspect for this one, too.
Yes. The Arduino Create platform actually allows you to store your code in the cloud, so you can access your hardware projects from anywhere. It's a very niche tool. I mean, you definitely wouldn't build a banking website with it. But if you want to make a robot arm move, this is your toolkit.
From the massive Amazon cloud servers to a tiny desktop robot arm, it's amazing. Now, we have one final tool to discuss today. The Outline calls it the Outlier.
Ah, yes. Jupyter Notebook.
The source clarifies right away that this isn't really a full-fledged IDE in the traditional sense we've been talking about. So why on earth is it on the top 10 list?
Because for a very specific group of people, mainly data scientists, it is completely indispensable. Founded by Fernando Perez and Brian Granger, Jupyter is a web-based application, but it functions entirely differently. It's fundamentally a notebook.
What does that mean, practically speaking?
It means you don't just write a wall of code. You write code alongside text markdowns, HTML formatting, audio, and even video. It is a storytelling tool.
That is a really great distinction. So instead of just building an app that runs invisibly in the background, you're creating a dynamic document that explains your actual analysis.
Exactly. Imagine you are analyzing 20 years of climate data. In Jupyter, you can write a nice paragraph explaining your core hypothesis. Then, right below that text, you write the block of Python code to actually process the data. And right below that code block, the software generates the actual graph or chart. It's all in one seamless flow.
So it's really the go-to for education and presentation.
100%. If you are presenting complex research to your boss, you use Jupyter. You wouldn't use it to build a heavy software application, but for data exploration and sharing findings, it is absolute king.
So we've covered the top 10. We've toured the entire workshop. We've got the aircraft carriers, the modular speedboats, and the remote cloud stations. Now comes the hard part. The listener's sitting there thinking, okay, this is all great, but which one do I actually choose?
It really just comes down to your constraints and your end goals.
Let's synthesize this into a quick decision matrix. I'll give you a scenario. You tell me which tool fits best. Ready?
Oh, sure.
Scenario one. I am working on a massive enterprise project. I have a team of 50 people, and I am absolutely terrified of breaking the build. I need to be able to go back in time if I mess up.
Visual Studio, that team foundation server with the rollback feature, is your ultimate safety net. Productivity is secondary to absolute security in that scenario.
Scenario two. I'm a data scientist. I need to analyze a huge data set and present my findings to a room full of executives who need to see the charts clearly.
Jupyter Notebook, no contest. It is designed exactly for that presentation meets code workflow.
Scenario three. I'm a student. I have a 5-year-old laptop that literally wheezes when I open a web browser. But I need to learn C++ Pro.
Avoid IntelliJ and Visual Studio entirely. They will crush your machine. go with code.blocks. It might look dull, as this source says, but it's fast, lightweight, and uses that highly scalable GCC compiler.
And finally, scenario 4. I'm working with a startup team spread across 3 different continents. We need to code together in real time.
AWS Cloud 9. The ability to run on those EC2 instances and collaborate in parallel makes it the clear winner there.
Perfect. There is one term we glossed over at the very beginning that I want to circle back to just to make sure we are crystal clear. We talked about text editors versus IDEs.
Yes, and it's a super important distinction to make. A text editor is often just a feature within an IDE. It's the literal window where you type the characters, but the IDE is the whole toolbox. The text editor is the piece of paper, the IDE is the desk, the reference library, the calculator, and the spell checker all wrapped into one.
That really helps clarify why these tools are so heavy. They're carrying a massive amount of weight.
They are. And as we wrap up today, I think we really need to look at the broader trajectory here. We started by mentioning that 2025 landscape detail, the machine learning integration.
Right. The fact that tools like IntelliJ and others are using ML to actively autocomplete code, it really feels like the fundamental role of the programmer is shifting.
It absolutely is. We are rapidly moving from a world where the programmer has to manually write every single character, every bracket, every semicolon, to a world where the programmer primarily manages intelligent suggestions.
That is a deeply provocative thought. If the IDE can predict what you want to build and instantly fix your errors on the fly, are you really a bricklayer anymore? Or are you just the architect describing what you want the building to look like?
I think we're entirely becoming the architects. The manual labor of syntax, you know, typing the semicolon, perfectly formatting the brackets, that is all going away. The value of human is now purely in the design and the strategic intent. The IDE handles all the tedious implementation.
The architect's toolkit, indeed.
Yep.
It really raises the question, in 10 years, will we even be writing code manually? Or will we just be having a conversation with our IDE about what we want the code to do?
That is the big question for the industry right now. But for today, you still need to pick your tool and learn how to wield it.
Absolutely. And my advice to you, the listener, pick one. Whether it's the sheer power of Visual Studio, the modern elegance of PyCharm, or the hardware simplicity of Arduino, just pick one, dive in, and start building your workshop.
Agreed. Ultimately, the best tool is the one you actually know how to use.
Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into the world of IDEs. We will catch you on the next one.
Happy coding!